Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Radio, where each week we talk to a musician, artist, author, or other creative Mississippian working in the arts across the state. I'm your host, Melody Moody Thordis, Arts-Based Community Development Director with the Mississippi Arts Commission. And today I'm talking with Oxford artist Andy Bedsworth. Andy, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about your work as a fiber artist, but before we get into the details, Okay. Let's start back at the beginning. So tell me, where did you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up, I was born in Texas, but I moved there. I moved from there when I was quite young. So I really grew up in Louisiana in the Baton Rouge area, really spent most of my all schooling there, most of it. So 28 years really in the Baton Rouge area.
Okay, and did you go to college there? Did you go to LSU?
So I did go to undergrad at LSU. It wasn't my first choice, but I got a full ride, to do theater, which is what I wanted to do. And so, and I wasn't quite sure by the time I graduated from high school. I didn't think I wanted to perform, but I had the scholarship, and so I was like, what am I going to do? I'm going to go and have fun. And I got to LSU, and as part of my scholarship, they said, oh, you get a work-study job. And I was like, oh, awesome. And they said, you can pick costume, set, or lighting. And lighting seemed intimidating because you had to climb ladders and be up in high spaces. And set design seemed out of my element. And by this point, I had been sewing since I was 14. I made my clothes. I made like my little prom dresses and stuff. So I was like, well, I know how to sew. Put me in the costume shop, And they did. And by spring break of my freshman year, I didn't know costume design was a job, like a profession. I was like, I remember telling the shop manager, I was like, I think this is the perfect career for me. And she was like, I think you're right. And that was all she wrote, that I was off doing like internships in the summer and studying costume design, making costumes.
So you unintentionally got into costume design.
You know what? I unintentionally got into a lot of things. And that's sort of a through line throughout my life, actually. But yeah. Costume. I was really in high school. I went to Performing Arts High School, Baton Rouge Magnet High School. And we didn't have any, like, football or anything. It was all art. So it was like the high school from Fame. And I had always wanted to go, right? So I was so excited. For PE, I studied ballet. And for 4 years, I did theater. And so there were times during that part that if you had asked me, I had wanted to be a performer. But by the time I hit my senior year, I was very willing to be backstage more. I was like, I don't want all the people tell me my voice isn't right or my body isn't right, or I just want to do something related to the performing arts, but I wasn't quite sure. So landing in the costume shop was sort of the perfect fit for me.
So you said you already knew how to sew. So when did you learn how to sew?
I learned this is kind of a funny story because my mom always sewed. And so I grew up in a crafting household, right? And sewing, crafting, there was always a needle and thread. We were always gluing stuff, making stuff. My mom would make Christmas decorations out of bleach bottles. It was like that kind of household, right? So then I wanted to learn how to sew. I was probably 7 or 8, and I had a shaving Ken doll. I don't know if you were alive in the 70s, but I had this shaving Ken doll I got for Christmas, and he had just some pants on, and I don't even remember that he came with a shirt. And I was upset because my Barbies all had cool clothes, and I wanted to make some new outfits for Ken. So I asked my mom if I could sew some, and she said, yeah. And so I proceeded to take two rectangles and sew a line through the middle and up the two sides. And she said, that's not going to work, Andy. This is going to work. It's going to work. I can do this. Well, of course, it didn't work, and it wasn't a pair of pants. I was very frustrated. My mom said that I didn't have any patience, that I was never going to learn how to sew. So fast forward to eighth grade, and I signed up for home ec. That was back when they still had home ec in Louisiana, and I took home ec. The first semester was cooking. And second semester was sewing. And I sewed a pair. We had to all sew a blazer and a pair of pants. And I remember we all had to make the same thing. I made my blazer and my pair of pants. And it was very frustrating. But I wore them to school. And I remember my friend saying, I wouldn't wear that. They wouldn't wear theirs. They were like, they're bell bottoms. Because they weren't the pegged pants. They were just straight leg pants. But I was like, I put all this work into it. I'm wearing my outfit. And then I took a little break, probably about 6 months, and then I started wanting some things of my own, some clothes, and I thought, well, it was expensive to get them in the store so that I could make them. And that was the end. Then I was making all kinds of stuff, shorts and dresses and then prom stuff. I mean, I really got into it. I was like, you know, really sewing. And Mom helped me because by then I was willing to listen to her advice, you know.
So maybe she saw you were interested, maybe saw that you had gained some patience and said, okay, I'll meet you halfway.
And I wasn't, you know, I never did make a pair of pants for Ken, you know. I mean, he's out there somewhere in a landfill with no pants. But I did make clothes for the Barbies.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, it was this way as well. Like, the Barbie came with the stack of clothes. You know, I guess now they come, I think each Barbie has its own clothes. I don't know how it works.
This one just came with an outfit, and then you could buy the girl clothes at mm-hmm. Howard Johnson's but you could not, they didn't have any Ken clothes.
So a blazer seems really difficult.
You know what? I look back at that, and I'm like, what was that teacher thinking? Because not only was it a blazer, but the pants were a three-casing elastic, which I know probably doesn't make any sense. But if you think about that, your pajama pants have one elastic or drawstring in them. Think if they had three, okay? And it was crazy hard. And I didn't do another three-casing elastic until like 3 years ago, you know, in my 40s, you know. So I'm not sure why she thought that was a beginner project.
Because you were in eighth grade?
I was in eighth grade, yeah.
Wow, that's...
Now, it wasn't a structure blazer. It wasn't like, you know, but still, yeah, it was... I look back at that now that I sew well and I'm a sewing teacher and I'm like... Oh my goodness, we should have just made like pajama pants, you know, or mm-hmm. shorts. Like, that was a very intense project.
It was like throwing you guys into the deep end a little bit, like really learning.
And I don't even know if any of the other kids still sew, because they were like, they wouldn't wear their outfit.
Maybe that was the sign, yeah. You were the only one wearing the outfit.
I was like, I'm wearing, and it was not a pretty outfit, you know, because I had messed it up and I'd re-sewn it, mm-hmm. but... I was like, I put a lot of work into that.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I convinced my mom to add some pants, a pant leg. I had taken off one of my pants and jeans and add it as a arm to a shirt. And she refused for so long, I guess to spare me future embarrassment. And I finally convinced her to let me to do it, and then wore the outfit together, you know. Of course, opposite
right.
arm with
right.
the
opposite leg.
Yeah.
It sounds fabulous.
Thank
actually.
You. yeah. And I think she was most shocked that I had no qualms about wearing it. I wore it with pride.
Right,
I
mean, yeah.
I thought, I asked you to do it for a reason. I'm right. not... Right. nervous about what right. it's going to look
this is
like.
My style.
Yeah, I feel yeah. great about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, she still gives me a hard time about it.
Yeah. My mom and I laugh all the time now because I've made my living for 20 years sewing. You know, I mean, I still kind of do, right. you know, and so we laugh about it. I never was going to have patience to learn how to sew.
So, okay, so you're in Louisiana. What brings you to Oxford?
The job at the theater department. So... after I worked, after I graduated from undergrad in 93 at LSU with theater, and it was like an emphasis in costume design, I made my way over to freelancing. And I would freelance for, you know, I worked at a children's theater there for 3 years as their resident designer. I sewed bridesmaids' dress, fishing nets for the agricultural department at LSU. I did all kinds of stuff, dance costumes. And eventually I landed the job of the costume shop manager at LSU where I had been an undergrad. My friend who was there at the time, she quit and she said, why don't you apply? You would be great. And so I did that, and I was there for 7 years and realized that there was sort of a ceiling if I didn't have that MFA. You know, mm-hmm. I was always going to be a shop manager, which was okay, but I wanted to design and I wanted to be able to teach. So I ended up at Tulane for my master's degree. And I knew, we knew that we were just going to stay at Tulane for the 3 years for me to get my master's degree, and then I was going to get a job in academic theater. And the job I got was here at Ole Miss in the theater department in 2004. And so though it was really hard to leave New Orleans, I was excited about coming to Oxford.
And so when you got the job in the theater department, at Ole Miss, that was in costuming?
Yes. So okay. It was not just a shop manager job. It was a shop manager job plus a teaching job, which is what appealed to me. So I would be teaching patterning and draping and how in the actual construction of the costumes, as well as running the shop. So it was sort of a step up from what I had at LSU. So I was really excited about coming to do that.
So tell me about some of your favorite shows or some of your favorite costumes that you worked on during that time period.
We did some really amazing, great, fun shows at Ole Miss. Some of the fun, the ones I enjoyed the most really were some of the dance pieces. There was a dance teacher there who did some dance pieces. And I also really enjoyed working. I did some work, some design work at for Tulane, I mean, not Tulane, Ole Miss. I guess it was called the Oxford Shakespeare Festival that was here for about 10 years. And I did Romeo and Juliet and the complete works of Shakespeare here. And I had a really good time on that. And then, of course, as being shop manager, all the shows were fun in some way because they were all different. You know, I used to say my job was so fun because in 6 weeks it would change. You know, we'd be doing a different show. And so the whole sort of theme and idea and even the kind of construction work we were doing was completely different on each show.
That's nice that to have that variety.
It was really fun.
Well, you're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Radio. We're recording at Ole Miss in Oxford, Mississippi. I'm Melody Moody Thortis with the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'll have more from my conversation with guest Andy Bedsworth after the break. Welcome back to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Radio. Each week on the Arts Hour, representatives from the Mississippi Arts Commission speak with different creative people across Mississippi. Today, I'm talking to visual artist Andy Bedsworth. So, Andy, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your art and fiber arts in general. So, before we talk about your artwork, tell our listeners what fiber arts is for someone who might not know us using that term.
Okay, so fiber arts can be a lot of different. There's a lot of, like, subcategories of that. So knitting, crochet, sewing, quilting, weaving, felting, dyeing fabrics. There's a lot of different types of fiber arts that are encompassed in that. And then some people just mismatch a lot of it together, which is a little bit more close to what I do. I add some mixed media into my fiber arts as well.
Okay, so tell me, so describe for me some of the art that you do in fiber arts.
Okay, so when I first started doing, I'd say I probably started doing what I would consider like my artwork probably in 2008 is probably when I started. I was, you know, sewing a lot during the day in the costume shop and teaching. And I think in the evenings, I wanted to do something that wasn't necessarily like what I did at work, but still creative, you know. So I started making collages and things, and I would put papers and wood pieces and gears and junk metal and photographs, and I would glue them to canvases. And then I would embellish that with hand stitching, because I still was attracted to the whole sewing process. And then for a little while, I kind of got away from the sewing on the work completely and was just making collages, you know. But there was something about the sewing process that's real appealing to me, particularly the hand sewing process. I really like to do that embroidery work and cross stitch. And so now a lot of times I will paint something on a canvas, like a background, and then I will attach fabric pieces to make a picture or a composition, and then I will hand stitch those pieces down to further embellish it. And then I may add some ink and paper and other things to it. But even some of my later work has just become, a lot of it can just be stitching too, just fabric and hand stitching, and not the paint. It's sort of morphing, you know, and it changes as I, depending on what I'm doing, because I'm teaching all the time different classes to children and adults, I get inspired by random things. And so and that gets incorporated into my artwork. You know, if we're studying an artist, I may get inspired by a technique and throw that into my own artwork.
So typically with your art, is it, are you then framing it or are you using it? You know, when I think of fiber arts, I think, well, like Coulter Fosler, for example, you know, does great, some great quilting work, artist in Water Valley. And, you know, her art then you use. So I was just curious, is there any art that you make that then you use as?
So when I'm making like clothes and stuff, obviously, but the artwork, no, it gets hung usually.
Okay.
And so if they're on canvases already, the stretched canvases, like I sew straight through the stretched canvases. Uh-huh. I don't have an art background per se. I have a design background. So I did have to take art classes in grad school, but I didn't learn how to, you know, stretch canvases and all that stuff. Mm. So I buy them already stretched and then I sew them. Then those, they just hang the way they are. But if I'm working on something else, like it's a fabric piece or a paper piece, I will frame it. And then sometimes I incorporate it into like a wall quilt too. So there are different things that I've done. It just depends on what the piece calls for.
Have you done much quilting?
So that's interesting because my mom is a big quilter, and I've done a couple baby quilt things and a couple things for friends and family if they want just basic things. But I have been going with my mom to the International Quilt Festival for 3 years now. I got funding through MAC to go and take classes. And so I just made my first, like, mom's like, it's not your first quilt, but it's my first, like, sort of official quilt from a pattern, you know, like uh-huh. a real, I was following templates and directions, and now I'm working on my second one. So I have been doing a lot more of that because it sort of, like, is very inspiring when you go to these quilting conventions, and fiber art is so varied. They're not just your traditional quilts. People are painting on them and doing all kinds of cool embroidery. It's pretty fascinating what you can do with them.
Yeah, I'm real fascinated by that. My great-grandmother was a master quilter, and she, you know, she's in all these magazines and all her work, and it's embroidered on. And then the one quilt I have of hers, I'm so fascinated with, that I guess it was pieces and parts that her and her friends would send in the mail to each other so that they had different pieces to work from.
Yeah, people do that. They swap. Like, I've been going to our local quilt guild, and, like, we all made blocks the other day using this technique. I had never done it before. And then they raffled off. Like, they just called someone's name. And so I ended up with, like, 14 blocks that everybody had done. So I'm like, what? So I guess I have, they're like, oh, can't wait to see what you do with it, you know. So I have to come up with something.
That was the raffle, like, you won the raffle, and that was yeah. And it was a culmination of
everyone's blocks. books.
That is fascinating.
Is it hilarious? Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this.
But so communal.
Yeah. It is. The quilting seems to be that way. The mm-hmm. quilting community seems
I think
to
it just know. Always has been.
Always has been. Because women would get together and help each other hand quilt their quilts. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was always very fascinated by it. I've never tried it, but my great-grandmother, she moved to a smaller house, but she was so into it that she had one of those quilting things that you raised it on the ceiling so that she could use the room.
I've seen those.
Right, and then bring it back down so she could quilt. Yes. And I always just thought that was so – it blew my mind as a young kid, just like looking up and the quilts on the ceiling and couldn't believe.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, my mom just used the hoop, and I have a hoop too that I just use, you know, because I haven't done any big scale things.
Oh, I see. I see. So, yeah, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So you're doing one section at a time.
I do one section at a time, yeah.
I see. Tell me more about some of the teaching that you've done.
I am like a mobile teacher. That's where the Art to Go came from, because I interviewed all these people who had businesses, and they all said, don't get a storefront. Just like... do your thing. You don't have to get a place to teach. Move around to different schools. And so that's really what I do. I teach on any given day several places. Like today I taught this morning at Oxford Park Commission class of, they're like 40 and up. They call it senior lifestyles and leisure or whatever.
40 and up.
Yeah,
is
I know. Senior. We were like, what? Wow. But anyway, so, but most of the ladies in there are retired. Okay. So they range from their 50s to, I had one lady who was in her 90s who comes. And then I teach, and then later this afternoon I'll teach at the Montessori School. I teach adjunct at Northwest Community College here in Oxford. I teach theater appreciation, which I love. That still keeps me in the theater game. Monday I was teaching at the Powerhouse, a camp for President's Day. I will teach lessons, usually 5 to 7 lessons, private lessons in my studio.
And what kind of classes are these?
So those range from the lessons. Some of those are sewing lessons, and then some of them are private art lessons. It just depends on what the person wants to learn. And then mainly the classes I teach out in the public are art, though I do teach some sewing classes. I'm teaching a fiber art surface design for adults, so we're mainly doing a lot of dyeing and painting techniques on fabric, and that's on Wednesdays at the Powerhouse. So it just really, every day, my boyfriend's like, I don't ever know what you're doing each day, and I'm like, I don't either until I look at my planner, and it tells me where I go each hour. Because it's different. Every couple hours, I'm in a different location, you know.
Have you ever done shibori?
So that's hilarious, because my mom and I were very interested in shibori. And so we went to a demo at the International Quilt Festival. And it looked so complicated that we were like, oh, maybe we shouldn't get into this. And then last year we went to a shibori workshop on accident, because we were so tired. You walk around and we were like, we got to rest our feet. So we sat down. And the title of the workshop was pole dancing. Because apparently shibori is done on these PVC poles. And so the woman was really funny and kept emphasizing the pole dancing aspect of shibori dyeing. And again, we thought, maybe we will try shibori. Huh. But it looks really cool. That's one of the dyeing techniques that I actually haven't done yet that I would probably like to do. But it seems very labor intensive.
You know, I took shibori classes in high school, and that's why I asked. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just kept taking the shibori class over and over.
What a cool high school you had that you got to take shibori.
Yeah.
What?
Well, it was called shibori and beads, and for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, it's a dyeing technique. So some of the – maybe it was our age, maybe it was shibori itself, but a lot of stuff did end up looking kind of just tie-dyed. So to just give people a visual – we all did the tie-dye. Our teacher wanted us to do the more traditional, you know, navy and stuff like that. But the class was called shibori and beads, and half the semester was shibori and half the semester was beadwork. And I hated beadwork so much, but I loved the shibori. I just kept taking it as an elective over and over and just, getting through the beadwork part.
Getting through the beadwork. I would say I also prefer dyeing to beadwork. I've done a little bit of both, but I do prefer, and I will do a little bit of the beadwork, but I do prefer the dyeing. It's so fun.
It's so fun, and I love, like, not quite knowing what you're going to get.
That's what the best part is. Like, sometimes you're like, that's awesome! And then sometimes it's not so awesome, so you just put it back in the dye pot with it, and you're like, we're going to make it awesome.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm very much a planner, so I think I really loved that, you had to let it dry, I guess, or soak.
Yeah.
For, I think, 24 hours at least. Mm-hmm. And so, it was just kind of like, well, I've done what I can do. We'll see what it is tomorrow.
We'll see what it is tomorrow. Yeah.
I think that's what I like
the
best.
And then there's the big reveal. You know? You're like, yes.
And you're right. There's a big reveal, but then you're also, like, never quite done. Like, you could dye it all over
you
again.
Could if you over-dye it, yes.
You could bleach it and then dye it.
And dye it again. So many times have I stripped fabric that didn't dye well and then re-dyed it, yeah.
Yeah, I hope somehow our conversation inspires someone out there who is afraid of trying something like that. Or maybe they know how to sew but haven't quite taken that into, art.
Right.
That maybe they'll explore that, because I'm wanting to get back into dyeing fabric just from our conversation.
Yeah, we dyed the other day. We dyed wool. I learned how to dye wool with Wilton food coloring.
Oh, interesting.
Melody, it's easy.
It does
because you put vinegar in it and half vinegar, half hot water with the dye. Mix the dye in there, the Wilton food color, basically, and you put the wool in there. And then you just line dry it and then heat set it with an iron or your dryer.
Okay. I was always afraid to use food coloring because I was worried that the vibrancy wouldn't come out, but the vinegar seems like it's very vibrant.
Secret. It comes out really almost more. I think it looks more vibrant than like the Rit dye or the tulip dye, because a lot of that washes out. But the vinegar, and that you have to use salt, like Rit dye you use salt with, because those are like cotton, so it's different. It gets kind of technical with but with the animal protein, being wool, being animal, you use vinegar and it comes out really great.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's the thing that's always drawn me. I'm a painter, and it's colors. I just love colors. I love to work with colors, and so I think that's what really intrigued me about dyeing things.
And it's so fun to dye with the wool, because there's lots of different colors of Wilton food coloring, and it's not expensive, and it's not toxic, It's not like you need a respirator and all that.
Well, it also sounds like it'd be a great kids project. I mean, if it's not expensive,
right,
and you can kind of, do you ever... You teach children as well, you said?
I teach a lot of children as well, yeah. I haven't done that technique with the kids, but we did this summer. We had a tie-dyeing, like we did a summer camp. It was like a three-day camp, and we tie-dyed, and we did all kinds of color exploration, but we tie-dyed shirts, and it looked like a rainbow had exploded in the room.
I'm sure. Well, you're listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Radio. I'm Melody Moody Thortis with the Mississippi Arts Commission. After a short break, we'll continue our conversation with my guest, Andy Bedsworth. Welcome back to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Radio. Each week on the Arts Hour, representatives from the Mississippi Arts Commission speak with different creative people living in Mississippi. Today I'm speaking with Oxford-based artist Andy Bedsworth. So Andy, before the break, we were talking about the different types of fiber art from dyeing. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk a little bit more about the Fiber Arts Festival.
Okay.
So tell me how that started, what it's like.
I did not start the festival. I inherited the festival. I now coordinate it. But in 2011, there was a partnership between the Yotnapatawpha Arts Council and the University Museum. The University Museum was bringing in G's Ben's quilts. And they asked if the Arts Council would have some sort of programming with it. So Wayne Andrews at the Yotnapatawpha Arts Council got in touch with the ladies who owned Knit One Oxford. It was a local yarn shop. And they put together this festival. And I remember going to the first one and thinking, this is so great. I called my mom. I was like, this is amazing. They had Angora bunnies, and they had people showing how to spin yarn and dyeing and all kinds of fabrics and things to buy and products made from fabrics. And then products just to make your own things. It was really interesting. A few years after that, they asked me to be a vendor. And so for several years, I would sell my sewn items, not just my artwork, but I would also sew funky needle holders and pin cushions and different things. And my mom quilts a lot, so she would do it with me. And she would come in from Baton Rouge and sell her, you know, baby things, blankets she'd made and quilts and all kinds of fun stuff. Then we got a little notice, I want to say 3 years ago, after the Fiber Festival, the ladies wrote and said, okay, we're done. That was the last one. And we were all like, what? And I wrote Wayne at the Arts Council. He said, yeah, I don't want to be done. I was like, me neither. So they figured out a way to hire me part-time just to coordinate the festival. And what's the best part about the festival? Well, there's lots of great parts about it, but it's in January every year at the end of January. So it's cold. There's not a whole lot of fun things to do, right? And this is a great way for families and just individuals to come out and spend the weekend and learn about all the different types of fiber arts. Shop, there's activities. We have almost 30 classes over, you know, 3 days where people can learn everything from making beaded, you know, knitted beaded bracelets, needle felting paintings, needle felting little creatures and dolls, spinning. We had several spinning classes, one on the wheel, one on the drop spindle, lots of weaving classes. We've had quilting classes in the past. We had 2 natural dyeing classes this year, knitting, crocheting, and sort of every sort of variation of knitting and crocheting. So lots of really cool classes. We had we always have a lecture, a guest lecturer come in and lecture about something. Can be, we've had a famous weaver through the university. They always still partner with us. This year they brought in a textile conservator who came in and talked to us about things you could do to preserve your old linens and, you know, baby clothes and all that kind of stuff, fur coats. And she answered, people brought in stuff, you know, that they had questions. So it's always just a super fun.
And did you say it's 3 days?
So it's, we usually set up on a Thursday and open late Thursday and have a reception Thursday. And then we run all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, so you said classes, vendors, and just open to all ages.
All ages. We have kids' activities usually on that Saturday, and we have animals. So we've had alpacas and llamas and sheep and goats, you know, animals that the kids can learn that their fiber comes from these animals. And when they give them a haircut, then it can become yarn and then come an outfit. So that's really cool. The kids all love that.
Oh, yeah, that's so cute. You have the softest animals.
The sweetest little softest animals out there. The kids love that. And the parents love that they're learning something, too. And lots of ladies come, men do, too, and come and take classes. They'll come from out of town and take classes for the whole weekend. You know, they'll take a class every day, you know, or 2 classes a day, and they just make a weekend of it, you know, and shop. And because we have vendors from all over. We have vendors who come from Tennessee, Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, Louisiana. So, you know, it's their time to shop, you know, things that you can't get everywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that particularly for fiber arts, the classes are so valuable. I know for me, I tried to teach myself crocheting and just wasn't quite getting it, you know, and I went and took a class at the Mississippi Crafts Festival Museum, and it was just like a small little thing that I was doing, but I just needed someone to show me in person.
To show you how to do it. We have a lot of people who are like, I bought a spinning wheel and I try to show myself how to do it on YouTube, but, you know, it's like you need someone, it helps, and then they're right in there doing it, and then they go home and they have the skill that they can use, you know. So most of our classes don't even require experience. Some of them do, some of the knitting and crochet are advanced, but we did offer beginning knitting and crochet this year, and we had people take both classes, you know. And a lot of the dyeing classes require no advanced skills, you know, or the needle felting. So
Do you think it's having like a resurgence?
Yes, I definitely. I mean, just in my own studio, people are often asking me to take sewing lessons, embroidery lessons, dyeing. People want to learn how to do those things. And all ages. I have lots of kids who are doing that, but I also have lots of grown-ups, moms who are coming in and learning while their kids are in school because they didn't have home ec and they wanted to learn how to do that, you know.
So, that's what it seems to me. It's like everything, we kind of swing back and forth from technology to, you know, these more traditional forms. And yeah, those of us who missed home ec and, you know, really want to learn those skills. I know for me, crocheting appealed to me just in general. I wanted to learn a different art form, but I honestly wanted to spend less time on my phone. Mm-hmm. And crocheting seemed like a really great way to do something productive with my hands.
Yes.
While I was doing the same things I was doing when I was looking at my phone. Like, right. I can watch TV while I'm doing
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
In fact, my husband loves fishing, and I quickly learned that it's a quiet sport. I thought it was a, I thought it was a chatting activity, but it is not.
It is not.
So when I brought my crochet, it was perfect.
Right,
it's like the perfect. So now I may be the only one that does that, but like we go fishing and I bring my crochet.
You bring your crochet.
And we have a great time out on the water.
Yes, yes. And I love that you took it at the Mississippi Craft Center.
Yeah,
I have some friends who teach there.
So I was the youngest one in the class, but I was so, you know, eager. And, you know, like I said, I had it halfway. But I didn't want to continue learning wrong.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So I needed them to tweak it a little bit. But right. I was just amazed. Some of the people in our class were just there for a refresher. They'd been crocheting for, you know, 20, 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And they just wanted to come. And I think some of them just wanted the community of sitting around a table and doing it together.
Yes. Yeah, so we have a big, one of the popular things at the festival is a big knitting circle, and you can go and crochet, knit, hand sew. And I mean, for 3 days, that area was populated with people sitting, chatting with each other, getting to know each other, people sharing ideas, and people like, how did you do that? And how did you, oh, I love that yarn. Where did you get that? And people just sitting around. Some people were hand sewing, but mostly crochet and knitting. And there's this communal aspect about it that's really fun.
That makes me think you might need to, if you don't already, maybe you can incorporate the raffle idea, right?
So we do have raffles, but yeah, we do have raffles, and those are really popular. No one dislikes a raffle, right? Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, it's so unique. We were saying, like, everybody throws in their extra pieces or something.
Yes, we do have, on that vein, we have the fiber yarn swap, the fabric yarn swap.
Nice.
So on Fridays, though it is a bead every day because we get so much, but people bring in fabric and yarn that they don't want anymore, and they trade it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And then you can just come and get stuff because some people just dump stuff off and we're like, please take some stuff. But it's fabulous. I always bring home great stuff. People like people bring in the coolest, you know, what's trash to you or what you don't want anymore. You know, that fabric you've had for 8 years or that yarn. Somebody else is going to go home and make something with it, you know.
Oh, I love that.
It's so fun.
I love the idea of an art form where you're kind of, you know, we as artists like are kind of by ourselves creating this thing,
right?
You know? But to have this other communal aspect where you're also with people and you're sharing and you're inspiring each other, or, you know, like just actually sharing supplies.
And they love that. And people do share ideas at the swap table. They're like, well, I don't know what I would do with this. Someone's like, you could make pot holders with that and blah, blah, and this is how you do it. You know, another person's like, well, I'm taking that. And someone else's like, I'm going to take some of that. You know, so it's really, that's one of my, of course, I say that about all the parts of the Fiber Festival, that they're my favorite part. But I really do love the that was one of my things. I said, we need to have a swap Uh-huh. And so that was one of the few things I incorporated because the festival is already pretty perfect. So,
and how many years did you say?
So it's in its, we just had our 9th annual. So next year will be our 10-year anniversary.
Wow, 10 years ten for the years. Festival. I did not
and
realize
And I've only
that.
Been coordinating it for 3.
So how many people typically come?
You know,
come?
Usually we have close to 1,000 people come through the weekend.
I'm going to have to come next time.
You
this
have
is amazing.
To come. It's so fun. Yes.
I did not realize it was so large or that it had been going on for so long.
You know, it's just in
so
the powerhouse,
long.
So we only have about 20 vendors, you know. But it is, you know, it won't grow a lot as far as, like, the space and the vendors that we can squeeze into that area. But we have a lot of programming, so we grow the programming all the time. We have demos now all the time and as well. So if you don't want to take a class, you can just go, come and watch demos every hour. But, yeah, we have quite a few people who come out of town, and they'll stay for the whole weekend.
And is there anything you guys are doing, like, throughout the year? Or is it mostly just during January?
So right now, we're just focusing on January. But I would love to do like the film festival does, where we're doing some more auxiliary programming throughout the year. And I've gotten some suggestions and some ideas of some workshops to do, you know, throughout the year. So maybe it's if we spread the fiber arts love a little bit more throughout the year.
So do you show your work anywhere?
I do show my work. I have, I'm a member of the Artist Guild in Oxford, and we have a little space over at Sugar Magnolia. And then I am a member of the Craftsman's Guild of Mississippi. So I have work at the Craft Center in Ridgeland as well.
Okay, well, thank you again so much for joining us, and thanks for listening to the Mississippi Arts Hour. Be sure to tune in each week for the Mississippi Arts Hour, a co-production of MPB Radio and the Mississippi Arts Commission.